T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Dan McNeil, Danny Parkins.
Here we go!
Afternoons on The Score.
So there's the schedule. We can get back into it later on, and you get to travel to all of these games. Oh, do we have our incidents?
There it is!
In Sox Royal.
Bite!
And here come the benches.
And here come the pretzels.
Fun in baseball is not allowed. We have to yell at each other because he flipped his bat because he hit a home run. Why don't you just get him out? That would be the idea, but that's not going to happen. So here comes everybody onto the field.
Here come the Lagoos! So the Lagoos are on the field!
What the hell's going on? Who's the guy in the back who's all pissed off for the Sox?
Get him, Ned! Hey, why not? Well, Renteria is telling the Royals to get back in the dugout. I mean, you know, you can't do that.
Next thing, both benches are cleared, you know. A brouhaha breaks out.
Joe West just threw somebody out. He threw Tim Anderson out of the game.
Like I said, I'm going to continue to be me and keep having fun, man. You know, these our fans, you know, they pay a hard-earned money to come to the ballpark to, you know, see a show, so why not give them one?
So you're going to stand there and take a projectile in the rear end and get thrown out of the game for it? That's insane. It's just wrong.
This is not the first time Tim Anderson has done that on a home run with the Royals.
No, I mean, that was pretty flagrant, especially after he threw the bat. You can't expect it to just be flagrant and flaunt like that, you know, and show your opponent up without any repercussions.
Wow, this is a black day for baseball.
Everybody do better.
Yo! Saddle up! Lock and load!
The McNeil and Parkins Show. Afternoons 2 to 6 on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago's sports station.
Let's do this. Thank you for hanging out. It's McNeil and Parkins on The Score. Top of the hour brought to you by Northwestern Football. Don't miss your chance to watch Big Ten football at Ryan Field this fall as the Big Ten West champion Northwestern Wildcats host Ohio State, Michigan State, and more. Season tickets on sale now at nusports.com. The hour also brought to you by Mancari Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram on 95th Street in Oak Lawn. We'll get to Chris Tannehill's open and the fallout from the Tim Anderson brouhaha yesterday at Guaranteed Rate Field. White Sox game going on as we speak. But if you follow my friend and partner and co-host Dan McNeil on Twitter, you saw earlier today that he was planning on being here and being back. He's been open as much as he's wanted to be so far. And you all know Mac, he will be more open than anyone else would be in his position when he's able to and when the time comes about the issues that have been happening with his family and specifically his father and his health battles recently. And so he was planning on coming in today. And then he got the news about Chet Kopech, his mentor and his friend, so that he's passed away at the age of 70 unexpectedly after injury sustained in a car accident a week ago. And Mac, understandably, was overcome with emotion and will not be here today. He will be in after the Cubs day game concludes tomorrow. I will not be, given that I'm hosting mornings tomorrow with Mike Mulligan. But Mac felt it was significant, and as did Shep, Tanny, myself, and Mitch, if he felt up to it, that someone, if anyone should eulogize Chet Kopech on the radio today, it's Dan McNeil, who got his start with Chet and all that. So Mac will be on at 2:40 today, so I know many of you wanted to hear Mac talk about what's been going on with his family, and he plans to do that, and his thoughts on Chet Kopech. So that will happen at 2:40 today on the show. Carlos Zambrano will be on at 3:20. He'll be in studio I honestly could do 4 hours with Carlos Zambrano, so narrowing it down is going to be very difficult. I want to know about his comeback. I hope that he'll tell stories from yesteryear. There's so many things that I want to get into it with
you
him.
You guys don't do commercial?
No commercials. I mean, can we do commercial-free? Probably not. We're doing two segments with Big Z. But I can just already tell you right now that two segments with Carlos Zambrano is not going to be enough for me personally. Shep, where does he rank for you, all-time favorite Cub? Because for me, he's pretty damn high.
I was very frustrated with him for during his run. Like, yeah. Looking back, he's obviously one of the most fun Cubs.
Yes.
No doubt about it, because you never knew what was going to happen. If he was going to try to eject the umpire, if he was going to throw the ball into the stands, what was going to happen? But I always was also left frustrated with it, too, because
sure. It's
almost like the Moises Alou thing of, all right, when's he going to blow up, and when's he going to get ejected from a game, and when's he going to, I mean, it's
definitely
top like three or four entertaining Cubs of all time in terms of favorite. It's not probably towards the top of my list.
Okay, interesting, because for me, that entertainment at the time was frustration. But history, like now looking back,
yeah, it's like, oh my God,
he was a treat
every day, every damn time he took the mound, whether it was hitting a home run, whether it was getting mad at the umpire, whether it was getting in a fight with Derek Lee in the dugout at Guaranteed Rate Field, whichever it was, you never knew it was going to happen. But I'd be lying if I said that I was a fan of a lot of that in the moment.
I wasn't either, but I miss him when it was gone, and I missed it immediately when it was gone. And he was just he has the record for consecutive opening day starts as a Cub. He raked. He was fun. He was interesting. He was exciting. And I go to entertainment. Sports should be fun. He made it fun. And so he is one of my favorite Cubs ever, and I'm really looking forward to getting him to tell some stories coming up at 3:20. And then Bill Cartwright, I mean, can't put it any simpler than this. He won a three-peat with the Bulls as a player, and then he won a three-peat with the Bulls as a coach. So pretty remarkable guest list for the show. Kind of surreal, honestly. For childhood me, if you would have told me that. But there's been a bordering on uncomfortable amount of fallout and discussion from what happened in the White Sox-Royals game while we were on the air yesterday. I don't know if this is just because it's local or because social media amplifies everything or whatever the case may be, but I looked at it as a fairly standard incident in baseball. And I get that people want it to change, and it should change, but you've got so many old-school baseball people. Ozzie Guillen was on the station. We'll hear some of it here in a minute. We're just saying, like, no, it's just what it is. It's how it happens. Mark Grody was in with me yesterday. Grody's not that old. And he was there saying, you know, there's got to be repercussions for Tim Anderson pimping that home run. I'm like, why? I don't understand why there would have to be. Get him out. And then Connor made a great point today. Those are two guys who are under 25 years old. Tim Anderson pimping the home run, and then Keller hitting him in the ass right after it. So it's not like that's going to wash away in the game. To use one of my favorite expressions that is Mac's favorite expression of mine, it's baked into the fabric of the game. It's not going anywhere. So when it was happening and we were having fun and doing our mock play-by-play of it, I was just like, okay, yeah, baseball – always has been wonderfully stupid, continues to be wonderfully stupid, and will be wonderfully stupid going into the future. This idea that this is going to be some sort of tipping point movement for baseball where they're going to get away with it and baseball is just going to wake up and realize that there's no consequences for that? No, that will not happen. There was a pitcher on the Blue Jays who was tweeting yesterday, like, guys have gone too far celebrating home runs that are insignificant. Like, that's just everywhere in baseball. It's passed down. Present-day players, young players still have an issue with it. So this idea that we're close to getting that type of stuff out of baseball, I don't think we're anywhere near it. I think we'll be having this exact conversation 10 years from now.
Well, and I think part of it from yesterday, too, is so much as you look at the pitcher, and yes, he's the one that threw the ball. But if you watch when Tim Anderson hits the home run, who's the guy that gets the most visibly upset or distraught in that situation? It's Martin Maldonado, the catcher for Kansas City. And it's like, okay, you think of this being, it's the way you're brought up and it's the way you're taught. Martin Maldonado is a guy that's from Puerto Rico, where we're always told, oh, they celebrate the game. They celebrate everything, singles, home runs, walks, whatever it is. They bat flip everything. And it's like, well, he was ticked off. Like, it's easy to say, yep, plain and simple, bat tosses and all of it should be allowed, I tend to be on board with that. But it's not like it's just widespread, one way thinks this, one way thinks the other. It's a lot more black and white than that.
I agree with you, and but it's not just cultural, to use your point, and it wasn't a pitcher. My mistake, it was outfielder Randall Grichuk yesterday, who was the guy on Twitter who was weighing in. There's some things that are just so ingrained in the fabric of the sport that I don't see it changing anytime soon. And we didn't spend a lot of time on this yesterday, but there is a beautiful irony of it in that it's the Royals. I covered those Royals teams. I was there for those Royals teams when Yordano Ventura was antagonizing the other team and throwing at guys, and they talked about it giving them an edge. They all had different handshakes on the base paths. Like, a guy would get on base, Gerard Dyson would do his Zoom thing like he was revving a motorcycle, Moustakas did the moose antlers, Hosmer had his wiping himself off, putting the backpack on, Travis Kelce copied it, and Hosmer and Kelce were going back and forth cross-sport celebrations. The Royals, their Twitter account just posted an Alcides Escobar forever Royal bat flip after a home run. Heck, I never hit a home run, so he was bat flipping because he actually made solid contact with the ball. So, like, they were showmen, and that's the hypocrisy of baseball. My guess is at some point this season, someone will pimp a home run off the White Sox, and a White Sox pitcher will hit that guy, and the shoe will be on the other foot. Like, that's where the hypocrisy is in the game. It's so ingrained in the game where if you do it and you pimp your home run, it's cool. And if the other team does it and they pimp their home run, you got to have your pitchers back. The hypocrisy is just so fundamentally ingrained in the sport that, honestly, the only conversation that I find interesting out of it anymore is one that I normally loathe, probably because I'm not a parent, but the, won't somebody please think of the children? That's honestly the only conversation off of bat flipping that I now find interesting is, is it okay for kids to do that in their little league games? Because if you're going to say they look up to these big leaguers and they're taking their actions and their cues from them, do you want little leaguers bat flipping and stunting on a home run? Now, this won't shock most of you, I assume, but my answer is, yeah, I don't care. It would be fun. I see videos of 3-4-year-old kids on YouTube practicing bat flipping. My guess is, if you want to say we should allow it, right? Those of us who are pro bat flip and pro personality in baseball say it'll help grow the game. It makes them cool, makes them a good YouTube highlight. Kids will like it. It feels youthful and fun. We allow touchdown celebrations in football. There's plenty of showmanship in basketball. We should allow it in baseball. Okay. Well, then if you say that it'll help get the game younger and cooler and fun and hip and all that, do you want your kids to do it at a little league level? My answer had always been, if you don't want your kid to do it, say, once your games are on TV and they're paying you to play, then you could do it. Or go ahead and do it, but know that you might make your friends on the other team upset and there might be consequences, right? Consequences for actions. That's an important thing to teach kids, right? You do one, you put your hand on the stove, you're going to get burnt. Okay, that's a big part of parenting, as I've been told. I was talking to Bernstein about it before the show today. He said it's even simpler. You trust a coach to coach your kid. If the coach allows it, then it's okay. If the coach doesn't allow it, then it's not okay. A big part of youth sports is allowing and teaching your children to follow instruction and leadership from the coach that you've entrusted them to play. But honestly, given that I have no hope in this going away in baseball anytime soon, and I absolutely believe that the Sox will be offended by someone's personality opposite them at some point this season, that's the only thing I find interesting left in the conversation. And I'm cool with kids doing it. I don't think that that's the downfall of civilization. I don't think that that's a millennial being weak, no accountability. I just think it's fun. And if we think it's fun and it'll help grow the game when big leaguers do it, we can't then be hypocritical when little leaguers do it. That's how I feel about it. And other than that, whatever. It's baseball. Baseball's full of hypocrisy, and it'll continue to be. I want to hear from some of the overreactions on both sides, though, because my guy Rex Hudler, and I love him so much. He played the game really hard, and he trash-talked a lot. But as an analyst, he's changed his tone a little bit. And the Cubs did exactly what we asked them to do. So we'll hear some of the overreaction to Tim Anderson, get your reaction on if kids are going to start bat-flipping, and Dan McNeil will eulogize his friend and mentor, Chet Coppett, coming up at 2:40. It's McNeil and Parkins on the Score.
And Maldonado gets right in Anderson's face after Keller drills him with the first pitch. And here we go.
Well,
it's not the first time. And let me give you a disclaimer. I'm not blaming either side, but this is not the first time Tim Anderson has done that on a home run with the Royals. And the Royals have not appreciated it either time.
No, I mean, that was pretty flagrant. Especially after he threw the bat, and then he yelled something, and looked like it was it towards Maldonado. I mean, you know, those are things that happen. Alex got one in the ribs early in the game. Hey, maybe that's the payback. And if you're going to do it, get him below the waist, exactly where he got it.
That's Ryan Lefevre and Rex Hudler, Royals TV broadcasters on Fox Sports Kansas City. Join the Score's Joe Ostrowski and Anthony Herron for a live broadcast at Real Time Sports in Elk Grove Village tonight from 7 to 10 p.m. Meet Joe and Anthony, enjoy Sam Adams specials, and win Score prizes. Brought to you by Sam 76, the crushable Sam Adams. Rex Hudler played hard. He got into some fights. He would scream from the base pass to Randy Johnson. He's told great stories of it. He was a football player. He was the number one pick by the Yankees, but he gave up a football scholarship as a receiver to go play at Notre Dame. So he was a great two-sport athlete, and he played hard, and that's what contributed to him staying in the big leagues. And the Royals have had a lot of fun in recent history when they've been good. So that's my guy, Rex Hudler, always will be. But it's pretty rich that he celebrated the Royals' exuberance, if you will, and got all bent out of shape at Tim Anderson throwing his bat. I think there should be more of it in sports. I think it makes sports more fun, and I think that there's actually lessons in there for kids at the youth level. But some interesting reaction on the text line to whether or not it'd be okay if kids started bat flipping and doing that at youth sports. But we'll get to that in a minute. And again, Dan McNeil will join us at 2:40 to eulogize his friend and mentor, Chet Coppick. But first, let's start with old school red ass Ned Yost after the game on the hit by pitch.
Joe West was trying to get everybody back to the dugouts, right? So Joe said, to me, get your team back to the dugouts. So I said, all right. So I turned around to get my team back, and Rick started screaming and yelling at my guys, right? And I'm like, hey,
To get back?
I respect, yeah, get back. And I'm like, okay. I mean, he was pretty upset. He wanted them back in the dugout, and I'm like, you know, nobody's going to yell at my team, all right? Yeah. But we got no issues, but I'm not going to allow anybody to yell at my team. Just give me a second, and I'll get them back. But that was it. There was nothing really going on between us.
But he wasn't yelling at you, right? He was yelling
at the team, get back in the dugout, yeah. And I'm like, okay, that's not going to happen. You know, so I'll take care of my own team.
Okay. You okay with what Brad did in that inning, too?
What, a pitch got away from him?
That one, yeah.
So, I mean, as far as I know. Yes.
That is such classic Ned. Oh, my God. In a lot of ways, I miss that guy. I'll be totally honest with you. In a lot of ways, I miss him. Oh, well, the pitch got away from him, as far as I know. Sure you do,
Ned. You okay with what Brad did in that inning, too?
What, a pitch got away from him?
Yeah. What are you talking about? What are you talking about, Jeffrey Flanagan? Oh, pitch got away from him? Okay. Yeah, as far as I know, that's what happened. Sure you
Rick did. Started screaming and yelling at my guys. Get back.
Spot on.
Spot on. He does these impersonations. That is incredible. Basically, he went Animal House. Vicious mother, isn't he? He can't do that to our pledges. Only we can do that to our pledges. He can't yell at my team. Only I can yell at my team. Here's Ozzie Guillen on the Mully and Haw show, of which I will be co-hosting tomorrow with Mike Mulligan. Ozzie's impact or input on what Tim Anderson did.
I know for a fact he wasn't showing the team enough for a fact we know what's against the Kansas City Royals. Enough for a fact he don't run. This kid, every time he don't run, he acting kind of that way. Some people don't like it, some people does. If you play with him, you're a White Sox fan, you will love it. But you're not. It's something you have to respect the game. You have to respect the other team you play against.
Ozzie's an interesting guy, right? Because he certainly embraces a lot of personality in the game. And a lot of you guys are seeming to make some sort of distinction between a bat flip and a bat toss. That's so odd to me. And I guess, listen, everybody has their line, right? We say that about when we have that conversation about, you know, separating art from artist and what you will continue to listen to or watch or support with your money and what you won't. And I always say, hey, whatever your line is, that's your line. So if a bat flip is cool and fun, but a bat toss is over the line, I don't really get it. But I suppose do you? And I think that's something that we run into in this conversation. We look for, like, those of us who are like, yes, more fun. That makes Tim Anderson interesting. The home run chain is cool. That'll get more young people. That's a clip that'll go viral. That'll play to millennial and Gen Z and social media. Yes, right? That's where I come out on it. I think sometimes we have a tendency to want everybody to agree with us. And I know I'm guilty of it. But it doesn't make sense for Ned Yost, who's 65 years old, to view what Tim Anderson did the exact same way that I view what Tim Anderson did. That doesn't make sense. We're all different people from different experiences and backgrounds. But what I would say is, for Major League Baseball, they should just put a stop to it. Rob Manfred should just come out and say, stop with the retribution for showing personality.
Fun in baseball is not allowed. We have to yell at each other because he flipped his bat.
Well, my problem with it is, like, Major League Baseball has taken this stance, and I'm on the side of it, but they've taken this stance where they've started the ad campaign at the start of the year, Let the Kids Play, where you have the press conference that has all the superstars, and it turns into smack talking and bat flip references and celebrating and all of that and the having fun aspect of it, right? Then why is baseball, why doesn't it come down harder? If that's what they're trying to promote and trying to get across, why does it not come down harder? Like when Chris Archer 2 weeks ago throws at the batter from Cincinnati for posing after his home run, why is it only a 5-game suspension? Why is it, if you're trying to encourage this behavior and have the encouragement of excitement and fun and celebrating and all of that, then why is it, all right, Chris Archer is going to miss one start just like he has for years and years? Why isn't it?
Right, I agree.
Make a statement. Take a stance on this and actually back your guys that are trying to show some personality and show some flair and show some fun along the way.
I agree completely. I wouldn't change a word. Old school baseball people would say you're taking away the ability to throw inside. You're taking away the deterrent.
There's a difference of throwing inside and smoking someone.
I like I said, I agree with every word you just said. I'm just saying what the devil's advocate for it will be, but I'm with you. I think they should put what Tim Anderson did in a commercial tomorrow.
Right. The Sox should have an ad campaign just around that.
Correct.
Like ASAP.
And hopefully they hit some more home runs. They get that chain out some more. Do something around that. Be the fun, rebellious team that shows personality. It makes you relatable to your fans. And most importantly, it makes you relatable to young fans. Because young fans can be your fan for a long, long time. Coming up next, Dan McNeil. A radio legend himself, but he had a mentor, Chet Kopick, who unexpectedly died from complications in a car accident last week. And I know Chet Kopick meant a lot to a lot of you, and I know that he meant a lot to Dan McNeil. So Mac will come on next to eulogize and remember his friend and mentor, Danny Mac, next on The Score.
The boy toy, Shawn Michaels, Mac, I'm dead.
I'll do my best.
I know a little 7-year-old boy by the name of Tyler Kopick is going to be ringside with that bot. And if you let him down, if you let him down, I mean, your name will be absolute dirt in the Kopick
house. Have patience with me, Tyler, please. Come on.
We thank the boy toy, Shawn Michaels.
That, of course, the voice of the legendary Chet Kopick. Died from complications, from injuries, from a car crash sustained last week at the age of 70 years old. And there's only one person I could think of to properly eulogize the man. His friend and his mentor was Chet Kopick, and he's the host of this show. Dan McNeil joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, home of F-150s for $229 a month. Mac, how you holding up, buddy?
Hey, Danny Parkins, thank you for giving me a few minutes. I hope I can get through it without getting a little bit blustery. I've not had an easy day. It's not been an easy few weeks for me, but I got a very healthy portion of my gratitude list is for guys like you and Shep and Tanny and Mitch Rose and Jimmy DeCastro and all my coworkers for all the, you know, sympathies and love you guys have extended me while my dad is on the back nine. And Chet's news today just knocked the oxygen out of my lungs. And I've been on the phone a few times today with those we worked with. And he was a unique dude, man. He was, before the score was born, Chet was the godfather of sports talk in our town. And he, more than anybody else, had a willingness to be a clown. He embraced the World Wrestling Federation. He put his arms around the roller derby. He would MC any luncheon anybody would write him a check for, and he was a workaholic. He spent a ton of time crafting his shtick. And the cartoonish, outlandish, bombastic sports talk show host was an enormously positive influence on me. I was 26 when Chet scraped me off the street to executive produce his show, and I didn't have the skill level at that point or the experience to be a host, and he and Greg Salk, our program director, believed in me enough to have me fill in for Chet when he wasn't there, and I had no business doing it. We had a monster talk radio station with a Hall of Fame lineup. For my money, the best in Chicago history, the AM loop of the late 80s with Jonathan Brandmeier in mornings and Kevin Matthews in middays and Steve Dahl and Gary Meyer, as Chet would say, the tag team champion, setting the table for Kopick on Sports. And I had no business hosting the show that followed Steve and Gary, but they believed in me, and fortunately it worked out. So very sad today. I'm pleased that Chet, in the last few years of his life, had relinquished a lot of the bitterness he was burdened by for a decade or so. He took a long time to get his head around the idea that the game had passed him by. I thought it was incredibly kind of John McDonough and Jay Blunk to give Chet a platform and be a part of the Blackhawks family. And that really was a good group for him to be with, because I think he was at his best when he was with guys who played whatever the sport in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And I'm just real shocked and sad.
How is your relationship with him recently?
Recently, very good. In fact, the last time I spoke with him about a month ago, I joked about whether we're on good terms this month, because I would get people would come to me and say, "Hey, Chet's banging you around on Twitter," or "He's at you on Facebook." And I would ask him, I called him and said, "Is this a fresh rip or is this something that goes back 4 years? Because you always react to things when people say that I'd been trashing you." And he had to admit it, that he overreacted regularly. He was very sensitive toward criticism. Chet made a lot of enemies. He was willing to burn bridges. And, you know, not everybody will reflect on him with the same fondness I do today. And we had battles. He was a competitive dude. He taught me how to play dirty. He taught me how to go for the throat and self-promote. If you don't do it, dangerous, who's going to? And, you know, I'm forever in his debt.
Yeah, so, I was thinking as you said that, right, go for the throat, play dirty a little bit, self-promote. What else in you do you attribute to Chet?
I think a willingness to be honest and not protect relationships at the price of, you know, your integrity. Don't if you have a partnership with a sports franchise, respect it, but never be a shill for the Bulls or the Cubs, or, and we had the Bulls at the AM loop, and he was very insistent that that we not be partial to any of our broadcast partners. And when the situation dictated, punch hard. And I learned a lot from him. I also learned a lot about how to take care of, I hope that I've done him a service in taking care of the producers in terms of how much airtime over the years I've given my producers. He was always very good about that with me. He didn't like hockey, wasn't very good at hockey, at least present day hockey in the 80s and 90s. So he gave me a ton of space for that, promoted the hell out of me internally with inner office memos about what a booking monster Dangerous Dan is. And, always very good. He helped shape a lot of broadcast careers in our town. Bruce Levine and Brian Hanley, I've read some comments from them today. And there are a lot of guys who owe him a thanks.
We're talking to the legend himself, Dan McNeil, on McNeil and Parkins. Chet Kopick passing away at the age of 70 years old. So, you know, I wasn't consuming sports media, right, when he's at the height of his powers in the 80s and the 90s. Do you have any favorite on-air memories of his that come to mind?
I think what I always will remember most is when Bears had signed a reserve running back, a Northwestern kid, Byron Sanders, who was the brother of Barry Sanders. And Barry had just won the Heisman Trophy and was drafted by the Lions. And Northwestern called me and asked me if I could do them a solid and put Byron Sanders on for a few minutes at 9 o'clock. And so I said, sure, we'll put Byron on. And Chet starts introducing Barry Sanders. And there was no stopping him because everything was scripted. Everything was written out earlier in the day. All of his verbosity and flowery introductions, it was all done in advance. And he starts into this Kopick-ese Barry Sanders intro, and my jaw just dropped, and he went on for 40 seconds. And and Byron says, well, Mr. Kopick, I'd like to answer that, but this is Byron, Barry's brother. I just signed a free agent deal with the Bears. And Chet says, oh, my gosh. Oh, good grief. Byron, I'm so embarrassed. But if Barry were here right now, how would he answer that question? With his canned laugh. But that was one of my favorites. And his fights with Steve Dahl were legendary. They didn't like each other very much. And it was very similar to some of the dynamics we have a lot of fun with at WFAN in New York.
I was going to say, I mean, that's a legacy in and of itself, right? I mean, I've seen a lot of people with glowing messages of him, and then I've seen people just have no message of him. And a lot of people in our business polarize in that way.
Yes, he had a willingness to be hated. I think he wanted to be loved. I think all of us want to be loved, but we also have to have that willingness to turn people off. And Chet didn't care. And he was an impressive physical presence, too. He was a big dude. Chet was 6'5", 6'6", in a big fur coat. And he was P.T. Barnum. He really was larger than life. And if you were A-list enough for him as an athlete, you got the three-name treatment on the show. You were Michael Keller Ditka or Michael Jeffrey Jordan or Daniel Oliver Hampton. And he was really, really a one-of-a-kind guy, and I will miss him.
What do you think he would want his legacy to be?
I think he would want people to recognize that he spoke from the heart, whether they agreed with him or disagreed with him, and that he gave his best effort, and that he played without letting crap that was on the outside tug at him, because he did have a divorce and he did have some dysfunction in his family life as a younger guy, and resentments die hard. Chet was sober the entire part of his life I knew him. He told me in my 20s that he was a raging drunk when he was in his 20s. It didn't agree with him all. He woke up on a park bench one day not knowing what city he was in. He said, this may not be a good idea for me.
That's a good sign.
The entire time I was with him, he never had a sip. But he wasn't the square. You know, he liked the music of the Rolling Stones, and he had a sense of humor.
The picture you posted, Mac, I mean, is that a... What kind of jacket are you wearing, my man? I don't recognize that man.
It looks like a San Jose starter jacket from their inaugural season, right? With Pat Falloon's number 17 on the sleeve. Yeah, that's the only picture I had of Chet and me. You know, I'm at that age, Danny. Someone described it to me really recently. I'm at the oh no age where every time the phone rings, there's bad news about a buddy's dad or somebody we know. And, you know, today's another oh no phone call this morning from Mitch about Chet. And I start rifling through the photo album. And that was the best I could come. I think that was the fog bowl.
Oh, wow. Really? When you guys went down
on
the field?
That might be at the fog bowl. Yeah, because that looks like we're at around the 10-yard line in the north end zone. So I think that could be fog bowlage.
Well, then that's a great picture from a great day. Yeah, man, like, I know we had you on to talk about Chet, and if you don't want to talk at all about what you've been going through, totally understandable. But how are you doing with all that? You've had an unbelievable amount dumped into your lap recently. Ah, we lost him. That's really fitting. On that question, we lose Dan McNeil. Does Mac not have a landline? After all the complaints from all the guests with all the cell phone correspondence, we don't have a landline for Dan McNeil. That's Mac, we actually needed that laugh, man. You don't have a landline in your house? What's going on
no,
here?
No, Shep was shocked when I said I didn't have a landline. No, I don't have to go out to a telephone pole anymore either for many years. I'm doing fine, Danny. I'm really grateful I've got such a wonderful support system, and I'm not saying this because it's the right thing to say. Social media have really shown to me the best of what they have to offer in recent weeks with my father's imminent passing. A lot of compassion from hundreds and hundreds of people, and many of whom I've never met, but they consider me a friend because I've taken them home over the years. And something that I always get the biggest thrill from, or just makes me feel good about what we do, and it doesn't happen often, but when someone says that we helped them get through something, a guy reached out to me not too long ago and said his brother's last words were, "I'm taillights." And they had a laugh, and those things mean something to you when you hear them, and I've heard a lot of that. So for all of my listeners and fans, you've given it back, and I thank you for that. And I thank my teammates for the patience they've shown with me and their compassion.
Nah, it's nothing, man. You would do the same for us, and we love you, and you have been dealt a very tough hand recently, and I know this is the last thing that you needed, and the chair will be here for you when you get back. So we hope to see you tomorrow and next week and beyond. But we're thinking of you, buddy.
Thanks for giving me a place to blubber for a little bit. I appreciate it. I feel better. I hope it was all right. And thank you. And I'll see you soon.
All right, buddy. We'll talk soon.
Bye.
That's our guy, Dan McNeil. Emotional and raw and honest, as always. And, you know, I met Chet briefly when I was an intern. I've seen him a little bit since I've been back in town. I saw that the Bears are going to keep his seat for the opener because he's made it to an insane number of consecutive Bears home openers. So I've seen him at Soldier Field a little bit, but certainly not my place to eulogize Chet Kopech today when there's so many people who know him so much more than I did, and he had such a bigger impact on them than he ever did on me. I'm obviously of a different era. Mac was, in some ways, a mentor to me and someone who taught me a lot of radio. So it did not feel right for a show that has his name on it to not have his voice on this day. So we appreciate Mac getting through that. We know it wasn't easy for him. The segment was brought to you by Lakeside Bank. Technology in banking, everyone talks about it, but there are times you need a banker. Lakeside Bank has all the tech the big guys have and personal service. Get your own Lakeside banker. They're always here when you need them. Lakeside Bank, it's about time. Carlos Zambrano will be in studio at 3:20 for the rest of the hour. I feel like we need some laughs coming up, and we have some audio from our guy, who I would love to call a friend of the show, but given that this bit doesn't go away, I'm not sure if that will continue to be the case. But we'll figure it out next on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.